Welcome to Hacking Your Life, a podcast on finance, philosophy, and everything in between. Here to help hack your life and get more out of it is Edwin Michel and Joseph Terry.
All right, here we go. Our first podcast of Hacking Your Life. This is Joe Terry.
And this is Edwin Michel.
Welcome, welcome, Edwin. The title of our first episode today, we have it here as The Why and How of Financial Independence.
That's right, Joe. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun with this. Before we jump into that, let's go ahead and introduce ourselves.
Yeah, sure. Why don't you get started?
All right. So, Joe, as you obviously know, you and I went to school. We did undergrad together at the University of Rochester. Mm-hmm. So we both did physics as undergrads. I did optical engineering, and then right afterwards went into a career working in an entrepreneurial environment as a project manager, and then essentially progressed from that to a more corporate environment. Along the way, did my MBA. And then finally settled into back into a small entrepreneurial environment, working for a company, doing leadership training and development. And in addition to that, I'm actually doing commercial real estate towards my goal of reaching financial independence.
It's amazing. I mean, you're bringing so much to the table. And, you know, just like you said, Edwin, yeah, we definitely became friends in our undergraduate career at the University of Rochester. I remember spotting you with a book titled The Quark and the Jaguar. And I said, hey, man, you know, what's that? And thus began our friendship around physics and talking about astronomy and quantum mechanics and all the high stuff. And so in my time in undergraduate, I picked up astrophysics and philosophy. And I worked with the likes of Dr. Adam Frank and whatnot. Edwin, you know this well. And then, you know, segued into, believe it or not, seminary. A few years after that, pursued a master's in divinity. And here I am. I've been teaching in Kingsborough Community College, CUNY, City University of New York, for the better part of 11 years, lecturing on philosophy and all its brilliance and beauty. And in addition to that, I'm also a minister at New Life Fellowship Church in Elmhurst, Queens. And so I'm bringing to the table a little bit of my background in philosophy and spirituality, theology, and even I'm hoping, Edwin, I'm hoping we could even somehow tie in physics and other things to the various conversations we'll have here on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the objective of this podcast is for us to teach life hacking techniques and for us to have a discussion around how we achieve happiness in our lives. And that's what's great about this is the philosophical, religious, academic perspective that you bring. And I'm bringing more of the economic management science / corporate perspective to the conversation. And through that, you know, essentially what we're looking for is the key advice that we can provide to our audience on life hacking in general.
Absolutely. So let's get started here. I mean, so the why and how of financial independence, you've already mentioned financial independence with regards to your own pursuit. Why don't you help us to understand what is financial independence and how can we move towards achieving that if we haven't achieved it yet?
Yeah. So financial independence, a lot of folks have various definitions of what financial independence really means. But what it comes down to is this. When you wake up tomorrow and you want to do the things that you want to do, does it align with the things that you're actually doing? So we all have 9-to-5 jobs that at some point we decided to get into for various reasons. Is that 9-to-5 job what we actually want to wake up to every single day for the rest of our lives until we hit that retirement age, right? And that's where we get into the thick of it, right? Why even describe a retirement age, right? Why do we have that objective? And in that, you see the definition of financial independence, because if we were truly financially independent, the concept of retirement wouldn't exist, right? We would pull that into our lives today, and we would be doing the things that we want to do on a day-to-day basis. But instead, we spend most of our lives creating a pool of money that we will then rely on when we hit the ripe age of the 60 or so, so that we can then continue doing the things that we want to do. And that could be anything. Many of us may not even want to stop working, but we may want to do that job that we've always wanted to do. Or we may want to stay, if we're lucky, in the careers that we're currently in, but we're doing it in a carefree manner, right? We don't let politics get in the way. We're not concerned about making that next paycheck. We're doing it because we want to. And that is, to me, what financial independence really means.
That's really an amazing definition. And what I find striking about the definition you're putting forth for us is it seems to challenge what I suspect are many of the prevailing assumptions regarding financial independence. I would think that probably most Americans see themselves as already obtaining financial independence or are moving swiftly to that by way of, let's say, from the millennial generation, right, that they're no longer living at home with mom and dad, and they have the 9-to-5 job that is able to pay their bills and whatnot. And so they are probably self-identifying as financially independent, or for perhaps even the retiree who's put in his or her hours and they're there in their 60s, and now they are financially independent because they have a nice little nesting egg. And your definition, Edwin, seems to not only challenge those assumptions and that self-identification, but it's, I would say, almost a paradigm shift that is needed here to really get our minds wrapped around this idea of financial independence. That this in other words, this concept, it seems like you're bringing here, really, it speaks to the importance of autonomy, the importance of a new kind of freedom that we can achieve, we can definitely acquire, given the sociopolitical and economic context we find ourselves in. And that's just stunning to me, because I'm saying to myself, for instance, like, well, I think I'm financially independent, but you're saying, well, you know what? It's more than just saving a little bit here and there. It includes that, but there's a little bit more to that. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. That's right. And another way you can think about it is, there's an underlying assumption here, right? Because we can have all the money in the world and still have issues in our lives. So financial independence is truly financial independence in the way that it allows you to do the things that you want to do in life. Now, what you choose to do with that time is up to you. So I'll leave that as a underlying assumption, is that you get to do the things you want to do. You know that feeling that you get, right? When, let's say, the nation is going crazy about the Powerball or whatever lottery that has essentially exploded into the hundreds of millions, and then you're thinking about it the day before and say, well, what if I did win? What would I do with my life? Right? That feeling is the feeling you get when you're truly financially independent. You can do what you want to do with your life, right? And the idea is that we can get there. And this is what we're trying to get out of this podcast, right? Is I'm not being unrealistic. I'm not saying that you need $1 million or a dollar tomorrow to get to this, right? It's going to take some time. But the part of this is actually a mindset shift, right? In addition to the actual financial objective, right? Because one thing that we're going to talk about is, what does it truly mean to have the necessary money to be financially independent? What is that actual number? I don't, I don't know, I hate to say that that number is dependent, but to some extent it is. But the reality is that you go about it by trying to figure out what exactly you need to live the life you want on a day-to-day basis, and you back into the actual dollar value necessary to do that. And there's some financial techniques and things that you need to do in order to get to that, and that's what we're going to talk about to some extent.
It's really exciting, and already I'm hit with the the connection with what you're saying and what the classical philosophers will call the need for the philosophical life. So for instance, Plato, who himself was a student of Socrates, considered the father of Western classical philosophy, Plato would speak of the need of leisure time in order to pursue the philosophic life. And Plato himself, his student, he had many students. He's the founder of really the first Western university called the Academy. His prize student, Aristotle, will echo Plato's words in that regard. And many would say, you know, there is a need for, they wouldn't put it as such, but they would say there's a need for financial independence. There's only a certain kind of economically sustained individual can pursue the life of wisdom, the philosophical life.
Right.
And you're saying, you know, hey, this is where we can begin, you know, and whether or not one is pursuing the philosophical life in the way that is construed or understood vis-a-vis Aristotle or Plato, or whether it's just you pursuing another life, the basis and the foundation of that is getting our economic situation laid out in such a way that we're able to do that. That's what you're saying here.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, Joe. That's actually much, much more difficult today than it was during Socrates and Plato time, right? I mean, back then, economically, what it took to live did not rely so much on money as it did on effort, right? A lot of people did grow their own food. You know, they did a lot of the heavy lifting that we now pay for by exchanging labor in a capitalist fashion that we do today. So if Plato and Socrates were to all of a sudden rise today, would they have the same advice? I mean, how would they see our modern life in that context?
I mean, that's a great question. I mean, at the risk of being anachronistic and reading into the past with our own particular biases and whatnot, I think they would have a lot to say. And you're right. You know, you're right in as far as there is a, you know, back then, at least 2,500 years ago, and that's roughly around the time in which Plato and Aristotle lived, there was this quality of independence that was afforded to the, let's say, the average Joe with regards to farming and whatnot. However, there are things now that we are given, and you know this better than I do, by way of the capitalist system that now allows for personal net worth unlike ever in human history. Right. We are able to amass wealth personally, and capitalism overall has seemed to have given us many blessings so that we can pursue things in the aid of technology and whatnot. So I think Plato and Aristotle will be taken aback by that. They would see this as an opportunity to perhaps allow more people to experience a kind of leisure time, but they may also recognize the systemic structures that we find ourselves in a capitalist society, notwithstanding the geopolitics behind all of that, that will require a certain kind of intelligence, a certain kind of awareness to navigate the system. It is a complex world we find ourselves in, and I think Plato and Aristotle will have much to say to that, particularly around the conversation and the question of, and here's a big phrase, philosophical anthropology, or in other words, you know, what does it really mean to be a human being? And so, you know, I would love to, as we go deeper into this conversation, to consider, what does Plato say about the good life? And what does Aristotle say about the ideal life or the good life, especially in light of the need for a kind of leisure time, a kind of financial stability necessary to pursue that? You know, but, you know, going back to your definition here on financial independence, Edwin, you know, it seems like what we need first is a kind of change in the way we think right. about money.
Absolutely.
And, you know, like here I am, you know, I'm a lecturer for CUNY and a pastor at a church, and I'm having multiple streams of income, and I'm putting a lot of hours in. Doing a variety of these activities. And again, you know, I'm thinking, here I am chugging along, you know, acquiring a little money here and there, trying to save, pay off bills and all that. But it seems like, again, Joe needs some kind of a real paradigm shift to get this. So,
right.
so my question to you is, you know, what are some practical ways in which, maybe not necessarily practical, but what could we do? Like, how ought we to change our minds, change our thinking, rather, around this whole thing of finance
right.
and the self?
Yeah, and great question, Joe. And I just want to I want to package up what you just said there, right? This is actually happening in economics in general, where we've always thought about income, expenses, and profit, right? Mm-hmm. And that was the only aspect of the equation. And a lot of people apply that to their lives. So by definition, the more income you had or the less expense, the better off you were. What we're now finding, Joe, and what you just said, is that we now have one more aspect to that equation, psychology. So we have income, expense, and psychology. And that is key to how we measure a more optimal profitability. And it's not just financial profitability, but it relates to the happiness equation, right? Because how do we really measure? So I don't want to go into the details of it, but this is what the science of behavioral economics is bringing to fore, right? It's that concept, and this is what's critical to the conversation we're having, right? The reason that we're introducing philosophy into this and the religion and all the other aspects of academia is because these things are critical to psychology, and it answers the questions in between what we see in behavioral and psychology, science and economics, right? And I think there's an underlying assumption here that the bridge here is in that, right? So I'm hoping our conversation gets us there. But to your question more specifically, one way that we can start to change our behaviors, change our psychology, is literally thinking about what does it really mean to have money, right? Mm. And there's this concept out there of a building more sustainable life. And I don't mean sustainability from the environmental perspective, but a life that you rely on you, right? So for example, a farmer lives a much more sustainable life, an economically or financially independent life, than the average American. The reason that is because he is dependent on himself to raise his own food, right? And I'm not talking when I say farmer, I'm not talking in the from the perspective of a big corporate farmer, right? I mean, these people. I think part of the heartache that they experience today is based on the fact that the main objective has turned towards economic profit rather than the back in the day, let's raise enough for our family first And then, nice. And by the way, this is how business started, right? Let's raise enough money for our family first. And if we have surplus, then we can go out and sell to our neighbors. And through that, you know, additional wealth was created for the family. But the core was let's build enough for our family first. And I think that that's an important aspect of life that has gone away, because now we are dependent, right? We have to go to the grocery store. We have to buy our clothes. And by the way, there's a lot of advantages to doing something like that. But when you're dependent on others doing those things for you, you become dependent on the monetary means to do, you know, to get to those things, which is why money has become quote unquote our God in some way, right? Because everything that we depend on to sustain our lives now is now out of our hand, and it's all transactional and it's based on money. So I say all of that because that's one way that we can start to have a behavioral shift. What is it, for example, we can do for ourselves, right? If we can learn how to cook or invest in our ability to cook at home, right? We then eliminate the attachment or the dependency on restaurants and having to depend on others to make food for ourselves. So then we then depend less and less on money, right? Because everybody knows implicitly that it's a lot less expensive to cook your own food at home. So that's one example of how you can have that mindset.
That is amazing. You know, that three prong what did you say? You said that there are three things necessary in order to really get our minds around this, particularly around financial independence. And it would seem financial well-being overall, that is income, expense, and psychology.
Right.
And yeah, you know, changing our psychology does require a kind of intentionality, a kind of work to see things with a fresh perspective. And I love that farmer analogy you gave us, or rather example of what it looks like to be independent, and how selling to, let's say, neighbors over out of the surplus for additional income is the right ordering in which we should perhaps consider our lives, you know, rather than pursuing at the acquisition of wealth as an end in itself. Rather, let's pursue ways in which we can situate a kind of independence for ourselves more freely, and then the wealth will come. Is that what you're
Absolutely.
Saying? So it's like a right ordering of like what to pursue first. And what I find fascinating about this is, again, going back to Plato, you know, in his well-known work, The Republic, which is actually a series of books together, Plato, using the political system of the ideal state, right, the state of justice through the mouthpiece of Socrates, that's the main literary figure there in the Republic. Plato, who is the author of The Republic, shows us that there are really three parts to the soul. In fact, it's in the book of The Republic that Plato offers us his psychology, his perspective on the human psychos, or the soul. And he says that the human soul is actually comprised of three parts. He says that the soul is comprised of the rational part, the appetitive part, and the spirited part. And he says that if we get these parts of the soul, if we put, for instance, the appetitive part of the soul first. So the appetitive, that word appetitive means appetites, those things that are pleasing to the body, those things that feed the flesh, the immediate, right? He will say that those who are ruled, that's his language, those who are ruled or governed by their appetitive part in their soul are disordered.
Right.
Right, they will find themselves oriented towards greed and lust and power. Right, and he says what we need is a right ordering where we have the rational part of the soul being the true lord. Right, because the rational part sees the end. All right. The rational part is concerned with wisdom, with genuine truth, beauty, and goodness, the Greek transcendentals. And that, you know, that other part, the spirited part, right, where we get the word spirit, that's just another way for Plato to say the will, our volition. And really, out of Plato's construct, he would say, you know, the spirited part, the will, the will will either will toward the rational or will toward the appetitive, you know? Right. And it would seem like, you know, the independent, financial independence that you're showing us here, it really starts with a reordering of the soul in light of Plato's construct, right? That we need to, it has to be more of a rational bent, that we ought to consider the bigger picture.
Right.
Right, we must consider the greater scope. What does this mean in the long run? Right, we can't be driven by the sensorial, by the immediate, and that's where it starts. And so this is really amazing to me, because the connection here, I think, is very potent, because you're right. You know, there has to be this radical shift. Psychologically, and again, under Plato's construal, that means a shift in who is Lord in our soul, in order for us to experience the independence that you are speaking of here.
That is absolutely on point. I'm glad you said that. I think, and we've had conversations about this with our current political environment and all the things that are going on in the world today.
Right.
These are the things that are missing. These are the things that are critical to that formula of happiness and success in our lives that we've forgotten, right? So we're consistently focused on innovation and finding new knowledge, and we're starved of that innovation. Well, why don't we look backwards? You know, why don't we look at the knowledge that has been presented to us in the past? Because in that, we will find the answers to a lot of what ails us, both personally and socially. And I think that this is again a great reason, or one of the driving motivation for us to put this podcast together, is because I think that we'll find that answer together. In our discussions, we're not only trying to enlighten ourselves, but we're trying to enlighten our great audience and better understanding what it is truly to be independent. And obviously that leads to happiness in some way or form. And we'll have a lot of great conversations about that. So, I think that was right on point, Joe.
Absolutely. Maybe we can move towards more of the practical, right? So let's say, for those in the audience, they're probably saying to themselves, all right, this is cool. I'm hearing the definition of financial independence, and I'm hearing a little bit about what Plato meant in his writings 2,500 years ago. But man, guys, how do I put this into practice? Like, what are some steps, some clear guidelines? Is there one or two things I can take away from today's episode and say, you know what, let me start like this, and boom, here we go. Can you, Edwin, offer us maybe one or two, maybe just like practical steps that we can just take away in order to move toward financial independence? And perhaps I can speak to the same question from a Platonic or Aristotelian perspective as
well. Yeah, and this speaks. Earlier I spoke to having that perspective of economics, finance, and management science, or decision science, right? Mm-hmm. What we've learned through management science, and for those of you who are MBAs, you probably relate to this. We go ad nauseum around putting an objective down on paper. This is the one thing that so many of us fail to do that ends up being having a huge leverage towards the things that we end up accomplishing later on in life. Write down what you actually want to achieve in life. Right? And there's a lot of people that speak to this in various texts. And you hear it in psychology, you hear it in business, you hear it in even the pundits on TV. Everyone points towards this, and there's a reason why it's being yelled from the top of our lung of our society. It's because it works. And I forgot the statistic. I don't want to quote it. So I won't give a precise number, but it's along the lines of 40-ish percentage of people succeed or do not succeed. I apologize if they do not have an objective, and that's a huge statistic. That's a huge number when you think about it. It's you're getting close to 50%, right? And I don't know what the exact number was for succession, but we're way north of that number for people who actually write down an objective, right? Mm-hmm. So the one thing I would say is write it down. Think about what is it exactly you want to do with your life, and do it in a practical manner, right? You know, it's. And this is what I keep, this is the part I can't answer for everyone out there, and this is the part that will help you answer as we progress through the podcast. Is how do you really think about what is the right objectives to have, right? But you got to start from somewhere, which is why I say that today the best thing you can do is say, "What do I want to do?" You know, and later on I'll talk a bit more about. If you have a dollar figure, let's say you put down your objective and it's probably $50,000 a year that's necessary for you to do those things that you want to do, right? Yeah. Then we can back into, okay, how much money do you actually need? And then how do you actually get that, you know? But everything starts back from what are the actual objectives that you have in your life?
You know, that's great. And, you know, speaking to the audience, you know, if I can just encourage you to take this seriously, the philosopher Aristotle, who, as I said earlier, was a student of Plato, is well known for his philosophy around purpose or goal, or as Edwin put it, the objective, and clearly articulating that objective in the front end. And for Aristotle, the fancy philosophical word associated with his thinking is called teleology. Teleology is the study of design or purpose. And part of the genius of Aristotle is recognizing the causal relation between design and purpose. So for instance, if we, let's say, just by way of example, I didn't know, let's say I discovered a pen. But let's say, for argument's sake, I never seen a pen before, and I don't know what a pen is, but I discovered the pen. So I see it. And now Aristotle will say, if you want to know what this pen is and what it's for, you need to really look at its design, its contours, its structure, what contemporary engineer science will say, perhaps you want to reverse engineer it in order to figure out its purpose, right? Well, that goes back to Aristotle. And so, you know, what happens here is when we lay out our objective, when we, again, clearly articulate our objective, that gets us to think more clearly about our design with regards to how we are going to achieve that objective. What can we do in order to achieve that objective? So the clearer we are with our objective, believe it or not, implicitly so, and it becomes more explicit as you think about it, the more it becomes clear as to how we achieve that objective. There's a profound relationship there. That Aristotle helps us to see. And it's really cool. If you just think about that and you play with it. And of course, Aristotle goes deeper in talking about causality, and he'll speak of the four causes: material cause, efficient cause, formal final cause. But perhaps we'll explore that later on in future podcasts. All very important, though, because at the heart of Aristotle's philosophical thinking when it comes to our lives, the human life, which he talks about beautifully in Nicomachean Ethics, his book, is, you know, we want happiness. He says that. We desire to be happy. What human being doesn't want to be happy?
Right.
What? Everybody wants to be happy. And it's amazing because really in the first pages of his book, he says the masses, the vast majority of people think that they will achieve happiness by way of a kind of rampant sensuality or materialism, consumerism of a kind. And he says, this is foolish. We can't, Aristotle say, I can understand why folks do that, but this cannot, in the final analysis, bring eudaimonia. Eudaimonia is a Greek word for human flourishing or completion. And so Aristotle will say, he knows this by way of the design of the human being. So in light of all of this kind of philosophical gymnastics, the goal is to arrive at the happy life. And folks like Aristotle and Plato, they're giving us tools, ladies and gentlemen. This is great. They're giving us tools to help us hack our lives. And it's, again, all connected with what Edwin's saying here with regards to financial independence. So just bringing it back, just a practical goal, definitely get serious about writing down and articulating for yourself your objective.
That's great, Joe. Yeah. So I think actually this is a great stopping point here. I'm really enjoying this. Thank you all who have joined us and listened to this podcast. We're really looking forward to many, many more. We're going to set up something in iTunes in terms of show notes and emails so that we can start to engage with you guys. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to us. At this early stage, we're gonna try and get to everybody as much as we can and bring in some of those questions into our actual shows here. So again, thank you very much. We really appreciate this.
Absolutely. We're really excited about this. And tell your friends, tell your neighbors, let the whole world know we're starting this, and we are really excited to have you on board with us.
Great. So I think we can take it from here, Joe. We look forward to speaking to everyone via email here and to our next podcast. So until then.
Cheers and God bless.
Cheers.